A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland, coming to you this evening from Ballymaloe House in County Cork. And my special guest is manager Fern Allen. Fern, it's a pleasure to meet you.
And lovely to meet you too. Lovely to have you here in Ballymaloe.
I have to say, Fern, I've been wanting to come here for many years, and I'm so not disappointed. The place is absolutely stunning.
Thank you.
And I mean, I suppose a lot of people, Ballymaloe, I suppose, would be famous for lots of people as a beautiful restaurant and a hotel. But of course, it has a really interesting history.
It does. Well, the house dates back. The first bits that were built were the castle and the gatehouse in our courtyard, and they date back to the 1400s. So Ballymaloe has been around for a long time with people living here. And through the centuries, different bits have been added on. The Fitzgerald family were the first people to have the house, and they really had Ballymaloe House for about 250 years. And things were quite good in their era, I think. They were described as one of the best estated commoners in Ireland at that stage. So, and they would have entertained quite a lot. They would have eaten fairly well, I think. And there would have been music played in the house. There was a harp that was made in Ballymaloe in the middle of the 1600s. So the music would have been played in the drawing room in the evenings. And it would have been a mixture of French, Norman music and Gaelic music at that time. So I wish the walls could tell me the stories, because I think it would have been a fascinating time to be around.
Yeah, and I mean, I was reading there about the history. I mean, a saint came through here. I mean, it went through the Elizabethan Wars.
That's correct.
You know, the wealthy merchants from Cork spilled over down here as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, quite a turbulent past, really, in terms of all
very
that.
Turbulent. Well, I suppose during Ireland's history, Ireland has had a turbulent history. And we're very fortunate in Ballymaloe that whoever happened to be living here at the time managed to steer a course through the turbulent history. So Ballymaloe didn't get into trouble. Whoever happened to be living here either remained neutral or supported both sides. So we were very lucky that Ballymaloe didn't get torn down at any stage.
Yeah, amazing. And then I suppose to look at when Myrtle and Ivan purchased it, they purchased it from the Simpson family. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Actually, Jim Simpson, my parents would have been frequent visitors to Ballymaloe before that, because my father, he was a farmer and he was farming in Shanagarry. After he went to Newtown School, which is a Quaker-run school, both my parents did. And my father's family were Quakers. My mother's weren't, but her parents liked the ethos of the Quaker school. So that's where she went. But they didn't actually meet in school, because he was 9 years older than she was. So it was after that. And it was actually at a dinner party in this house that they met. The Simpsons were having a dinner party one evening, and they invited my father separately and my mother separately, and they put them sitting next to each other in the dining room, and that was the first time they met, and it was in this house.
Wow. And I believe their parties were quite decadent, legendary affairs. Did Myrtle talk about those parties, or did you?
Not so much. Yeah. I'd say she was trying to keep a few things quiet.
Yeah, but it was famous, of course, for a house. I mean, if you got invited to a party here, you knew you were going to have a good night.
Absolutely. They were very hospitable people.
And I mean, what's interesting as well is the wide interest. I mean, Ivan had farming interests, as you said there, growing tomatoes, cucumbers and glasshouses, mushrooms in dark wooden sheds. I was reading about him, you know, it seemed that it was just in the blood, was it?
Yes, well, he always wanted to be a farmer, and he was quite a progressive farmer for his day. He used to subscribe to the New Zealand Farmers Journal, which was considered unusual for an Irish farmer, because New Zealand were considered, the New Zealand farmers were considered to be at the top of their game, which I suppose in many ways they still are. So he would get all sorts of ideas and new technology coming in from the other side of the world.
Interesting. And when they purchased it, I mean, when it came up for sale and they decided to buy it, then they spent 16 years basically farming here.
They did. Well, my mother, I suppose, was raising her family. And it was a very busy place. Lots of people would come and visit the farm. My father got a bit of a name for being, you know, there was always something exciting happening. So he would get visitors from around Ireland, but also particularly Scandinavia. And that's really was the start of my mother learning how to cook, because at about 1 o'clock, there might be about 20 hungry farmers looking for a bite of lunch. So she'd have to put something on the table. So she was using the ingredients that were coming from the farm and from the locality. And that's really where it all started.
Yeah, and that's very interesting because, I mean, when you look there at, in 1964, I think, is when she started, she decided that she was then going to try her hand at a restaurant.
That's correct, yes.
And, I mean, was that because obviously she had all this experience and, you know, she had really put her time in with cooking for all the farmers, I guess.
Yes, but even before that, she started writing articles for the Irish Farmers Journal.
Yes.
So after that, things became a bit more organised and she was testing recipes. So then she was kind of, an idea began to form in her head, but she knew there was big gaps in her knowledge. So she actually found out about an American lady running a cookery school in Paris. And that lady was Julia Child. So she enrolled in Julia Child's school for a little bit. And there she learned the more complicated things that she couldn't get from a book, like how to make souffles and terrines and things like that. And then when she felt confident enough, she decided to open the doors. And that was 1964.
Well, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, Julia Child, of course, who would be, you know, I mean, a legend in her own right, her books, of course. And I mean, people still widely watch her black and white videos on YouTube. I mean,
that's
she's
right.
Amazing. I mean, it's like theatre, really, when you're
absolutely
watching her. Yeah.
But
that was an amazing opportunity, wasn't it?
When
you think back how pioneering Myrtle was, like that she went, she was very determined, wasn't she?
She was. And she was also very confident in what she was doing. She knew instinctively that the food that was being produced on the farm and the fish coming from Ballycotton was as good as, if not much better, than a lot of the food in the rest of the world. So she had the absolute confidence to just serve what was coming in off the land, and she wasn't concerned about being posh or anything like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember reading a lovely piece there where it was, in 1964, when she said, "The children were growing up and she could see a different future. On a winter's day, I sat by the fire alone and wondered what I would do in this big house when they were all grown up."
Yes, and I laugh at that because at that stage I was 2, I think. So I was a long way from being grown up.
So she was planning well in
advance.
She
was planning in advance, absolutely.
That's amazing. And I mean, and then they put an ad in the Cork Examiner: "Dine in an historic country house, open Tuesday to Saturday."
And she was so concerned that the neighbours would think she was getting above herself. So she didn't want to put her name or the name of the house or anything in there. She just put the phone number so that people wouldn't be gossiping, saying, "What is Myrtle up to now?"
Yeah, amazing. And I mean, how did it go? I mean, obviously, booking essential. I love that. You know, I mean, she was ahead of her time. And she had a few local women helping her, and off she went.
That's right. And it was very hard in those days, as actually the world has come full circle. It's hard to get chefs at the moment too. But in those days, it was virtually impossible. There would be chefs in the cities, but not out here in the countryside. But children would leave school at an early age. So they'd be looking for a job. These would be 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds looking for a job. And they could go work in the farm or the gardens. But if anybody was interested in cooking, she would take them in and teach them from scratch. And the lovely thing about that is we still have a lot of those families working with us, the next generation and the generation afterwards. So that's a really nice link.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, something very special happened to you yesterday evening with a gentleman that had been here many years ago, and he brought you these amazing menus from, I think, what year?
1972, yeah.
Wow, and were they, that would have been almost close, just a few years after this, so little hand-typed menus. And when you were showing them to me, I mean, going through them, I mean, it was very, very, very progressive, wasn't it, compared to, I mean, almost like you get today.
Yes, absolutely, it was. I mean, her food was always, it was never complicated, but yet it had a sophistication. And we very much follow her principles and ethos up to this day. At the moment in our kitchen, our chef is Dervla, who is a niece-in-law of mine, and she's married to my nephew. And Dervla very much follows my mother's ethos. And, you know, cooking things, it's amazing how the simple things are sometimes the ones with the most impact. Our carrots, for instance, come up from the garden with the dirt still on them, and they're washed, obviously, and cooked, but they've never been refrigerated. So the flavour that comes from them is quite extraordinary. And likewise, the ballycotton potatoes, and it's the carrageen moss pudding, the local seaweed pudding. It's the simple things that people, when they come, they say, wow, that flavour is amazing.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, that rings true, I mean, obviously, to today as well, because we're in a, well, I won't say packed, because I suppose these days nothing is packed anymore, but in a very full and buzzing dining room last night, and lovely the way that it spread out in the house here. Just people were just so delighted to be back, and the as you said, the quality and the flavours, of course, still true here today. And that area here, I suppose the area here as well, Fern, you're spoiled for choice. This part of Cork, of course, really, I mean, it's great for growing everything, isn't it?
It is. It's very good farming land, and we're right next to the sea. So we are spoiled for choice, I think. And we've got amazing producers around us as well. Cheesemakers and smoked fish producers. Lots to choose from.
Wonderful. That brings us along nicely now to your first choice of music this evening. What have you picked for us?
Okay, well, this evening my first choice is by a female singer, Lisa O'Neill. And the song is called Rock the Machine.
Wonderful.
I'm losing...
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com
on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland with my special guest this evening, Fern Allen, down in the tranquil and beautiful setting of Ballymaloe House here in County Cork. Very nice piece of music there, Fern, lovely and relaxing. Really interesting, we were chatting there before your music choice about Myrtle opening the restaurant. And of course, she had that from 64 to 1967. And then she needed to get a drinks license. So what happened then?
Yes, because from 1964 to 67, if somebody came and they wanted a little brandy or something, in those days, you could kind of chance it and you could give it to them. And obviously, there was no drink driving laws, etc. So people were happy out. But in order to get an actual drinks license, they had to have 11 bedrooms. So they began one by one renovating the bedrooms. Now, this was quite a lot of work because some of the bedrooms went from one to another. So they had to put in passageways, etc. So it was a funny time in the house here as a family. It was a very dangerous thing to go off and stay with your friend for a couple of nights because you'd come home and you wouldn't recognise your bedroom. You'd open the door. There'd be a new carpet on the floor that would have been painted and there'd be a stranger in your bed. And that actually happened. So, but they managed to get the 11 bedrooms in 1967. And then the business kind of got a lot busier after that. In those days, they got in about 1967, 68, late 60s, they got very good reviews in the food guides, the Good Food Guide and the Egon Roney Guide. So then the business obviously got busier and they got overseas visitors. Tourism at that stage was just beginning to take off in Ireland as well. So it was just, everything just happened at the right time.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because she was a real pioneer in terms of tourism because she became involved in Paris as well. And I mean, you're a founding member of the Blue Book and she was really instrumental in that, wasn't she?
She was. I think it was herself and Jane O'Callaghan from Longville House. Yes, and it was, it's a lovely thing to have done with all these country houses and to bring them together so that they're working together. And it's a very, it's a nice kind of personal thing because you're coming into somebody's own house. It's not an impersonal hotel. It's very much somebody's house.
And herself, I mean, what would she get very excited? I mean, when she, I mean, we come on, of course, because her famous cookery book, which I just saw there in the shop earlier, 1977, a friend of mine, I must mention, in Dublin, Mary O'Carroll, who had a little catering business, swore by this book and she still has an original copy. But that book, of course, became so famous. I mean, it was the go-to cookbook. It was like Fanny Craddock, really, wasn't
it? That's correct, yes. So the Ballymaloe cookbook. And it's amazing. That cookbook has never been out of print. So it's still on the go. Obviously, it's gone through various different versions and been updated a little bit. But this, and it's a lovely book because not only is it the recipes that we still use a lot here in the house every day, but it's also little stories. She was a very good writer, so she'd tell little stories and it's a little snapshot of history in Ireland at that time.
And it was very interesting. The Farmer's Journal, of course, was where she wrote and her recipes. And these were clipped out. These were there was no week that would go by with houses. They wouldn't keep all the clippings, of course, in those days. What made her go? I mean, was the Farmer's Journal, was that for a reason? Or, I mean, was that because she just liked the whole farming?
Well, they were farmers, my parents. That's their origins. And they were very involved with Machrane Ferma in those days too. And they were asked by the editor of the Farmer's Journal. My mother was asked by Paddy O'Keefe, he was the then editor, if she would write women's articles on fashion and makeup. So she said, well, I know nothing about fashion and makeup, but I'll write some cookery articles. So that's how she started those. And we're very lucky that those articles have now been taken by Regina Sexton to UCC and they're being archived for us at the moment. So they'll be available for people. Anybody that is interested will be able to see them in time.
Wonderful. And as a child growing up around all of this, of course, going on, how was it for yourself? The book is such a tome. Was there a lot of pressure? Was she busy all the time? What was it like? Was it go, go, go?
Well, she was always busy. She started the business when I was 3, I think, something like that. So I grew up really in the business. I didn't really know any other life. And I used to cycle my tricycle around the kitchen floor in between people's legs and everything. I'm sure that I drove them all mad. But she was always busy. And right through her whole life, she always, even when she was into her 60s, 70s, 80s, she was very, very busy. She did all sorts of things. She set up the Eurotalk Association with Paul Bocuse, and that was really set up to protect the integrity of our food. She could see that with modern ways of producing food and modern ways of farming, that it wasn't always the best for the quality of the food. So chefs all over Europe and all over the world, I presume, were realizing this, but they were too busy in their kitchens to do anything about it. So that's why she set up the Eurotalk Association. And there was lots of chefs from all over Europe. And she became president of it for a few years. And she'd be constantly flying back and forth to Brussels. And she managed to get quite a few of the crazy laws that were being made either altered or abolished altogether, which was most welcome, because then the small producers could keep going. They were being very much squashed out of it. So she very much supported. She was always supporting small producers. Anybody doing anything in the food line, she would help them and support them.
Wonderful. And yeah, indeed, we had Gareth Mullins on, who's the Commissioner General at the moment, and he's doing great work there. And I suppose, if you, for people who don't know your talk, really what you were saying, it's really this, it is protecting that and bringing, like, I think there's over 200 in Ireland, is that correct?
I'd say easily, yes.
Wonderful. And from when did you yourself then decide, you know, I want to get into this business? When did you always have a passion for hospitality?
When I was in London at a certain stage, and I was doing all sorts of different things. And at one stage, I decided I'd really like to learn how to cook. So I wrote home. There was no emails or whatever, and mobile phones. So I wrote home to my mother and I said, can you send me the money to go to Leith's Cookery School in London? And she said, no, you can come home to learn how to cook. So she, that was in about October. And she put an ad in the paper in November saying that in January there was going to be a cookery course starting in Ballymaloe House. And we got, I think it was 7 students for that first cookery course. And it was held here in the house. And Rina and my mother would do every second day. So that gave me, I did the cookery course. It was a 10-week one, that first one. And that gave me the tools then to go off travelling. And I travelled fairly widely for the next few years. So if you can cook, you can travel anywhere really and get work, which is really nice. So, and then there was a lot of things I did over the years. As part of my travels, I worked in La Ferme Milandaise just before it closed. That was the French restaurant in Paris that we were running at the time. That was a wonderful adventure, really. We ran it on a, our chefs would go out on a rota basis. So they'd go out for 3 months and come back then for, and then they'd come back and another lot of chefs would go out. So I very much remember the car pulling up outside the kitchen door and chefs would be squished into it, and anybody basically looking for a spin to Paris would come along and try and hop in the car, and sacks of flour and everything would be put on their knees because we had to make the Irish bread with the Irish flour, etc. So I worked in Paris for just at the end of our time there. It was an amazing time. And it was funny, on a Sunday morning, we would do a Sunday brunch and we'd have all the lovely Irish products, the smoked salmon, the oysters, the rashers, sausages, puddings, etc., etc. And you'd see all the French cafe owners standing outside their cafes with their croissants and café au lait, scratching their heads, saying, why is there a queue outside the Irish restaurant? Because all these Parisians were wanting something different. Yeah. And that was wonderful. It was a great adventure.
Amazing. And I mean, you mentioned there, the, of course, I mean, Ballymaloe was famous as well for the cookery school, needless to say. I was in Tromsø, would you believe, going up at the top of Norway, wow, looking at the Northern Lights a few years ago, and met a lovely guy called Heinrich up there. And I was in Cork, and he said, oh my God, he had the best time ever in his life. He's a chef now.
Fantastic.
And he was here for 3 months and he never wanted to leave. And I was like, wow, it's amazing. past the Arctic Circle, I was hearing about Ballymaloe. And in fact, I put a little picture up last night and he was all messaging and everything. But, you know, such happy memories. Mm. And it's amazing that, I mean, you've created a family globally, I mean, from Ballymaloe. And that's one thing about what you do here. It's amazing how food, and it brings people together in an incredible way, doesn't it?
It does, yes. Well, we've always had people from all over the world really working with us as well as staying with us. And the cookery school has increased that amazingly in, you know, because there are people, students coming from all over the world to do the cookery course, and they spend about 12 weeks in Shanagarry. And a lot of them just become to really love the place and don't want to leave. And we also would take students in to work here in our kitchens as interns or as more permanent staff members. It's really nice.
So, Fern, what have you picked for your second choice of music this evening?
Okay, my second choice this evening is by a guy called Andrew White, and the song is called Christy Whelan Sings.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. irelandsbluebook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Fern Allen from Ballymaloe House in County Cork. Lovely piece of music there, Christy Whelan sings. Fern, this is really an amazing family business, isn't it? For anybody who, I suppose, has watched you over the years. I mean, there are so many different arms to it. All, of course, kind of connected really with the food. Like last night, for example, I had the most lovely oysters. I had the most beautiful Ballycotton lobster, Rossmore, I should say, where the oysters are from. And you've been doing those for years and years and years.
We have actually, because last night we had a gentleman actually in for dinner, and he'd been with us in 1972. And he showed me, he'd kept his menu from the night he was here in 1972. And on that menu, we had Rossmore oysters. And my nephew in law, Rupert, is now doing the Rossmore oysters again. So, and they were there on the menu for him last night. So he was very excited about that.
And they never, I mean, they were really, I've been lucky enough to get around a little bit in my time, and they're really amazing. Just the flavour was just something else. So we do have incredible produce here in Ireland, don't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
And in terms of the family business then, what other, I mean, you have so many different arms to it.
Yeah, well, there's the house here, obviously, and also from the main house business, lots of other businesses have been produced, obviously. So Wendy, my sister, and Sive are in the shop here, the Ballymaloe shop. Then in the cookery school, there's Dorina and her brother, Rory O'Connell. There's two Rorys, so I've got a brother Rory as well. It's very confusing. And Rachel, obviously, in the school. Then my sister Yaz and her daughter Maxine do the Ballymaloe relish and all the different sauces. Sasha last night was serving you your wine, my nephew. And tonight, my son Fionn, who is at college, he's working here also. My daughter Fia, who's at Shannon College of, she's studying hotel management, thankfully. So she's working here also. Roisin, my niece, runs the housekeeping department here and makes sure that all our rooms are looking wonderful and fresh and nice fabrics, etc. Robin, my niece, made the soap that you had in your bathroom last night.
Wow, the lavender soap. That's
lavender
pretty good.
Dervla, obviously, is my niece-in-law, and she's our chef here in the kitchen. And my brother Rory and his son Darren run the farm. And Rory also plays music in the drawing room in the evenings.
Wow. I mean, that is like, it's dynasty stuff, isn't it? It's really, you're like the Crystal Carrington of Ballymaloe. That's fast. It's really fascinating. It's incredible, isn't it, how the family have sort of stayed here, and they all love working here like this. And the creativity really jumps out at you, Fern.
Well, it's a nice place to live. It's a nice part of the country. And I think, you know, we all had very good childhoods here. So, and we wanted that for our own children. So it is very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I met some lovely people here yesterday from Yorkshire, and they had four kids, and they were just having the most wonderful time to escape here. And I mean, they were just absolutely loving it. For people that maybe haven't been here before, I suppose you were saying you've about 32 rooms,
32 bedrooms,
32 bedrooms,
and they're all completely different. Because it was never built as a hotel, if you know what I mean. It was renovated from a family home to a hotel. So each room is different. All of our rooms have different names. A lot of them are colours or plants or something else.
Yeah.
So we are a country house in the middle of a farm. That's what we are. And we don't have pretenses to be anything other than that, but a very comfortable country house. So when you come in and you've got the drawing room just there, and there's always a fire lit. If it's in the middle of a heat wave in July, the fire might not be lit for a couple of days. But basically, the fire is always lighting there in the drawing room. It's very comfortable. It's a lovely area for walking. We've got lovely trails around the farm here, but also if you want to go a bit further, Ballycotton Cliffs are very close by, and lovely strands, beaches to walk on.
Yeah, Gary Vaux Beach, of course, absolutely. I was up there a few days. Stunning. I hadn't been there since I was younger as a child. Yeah. Beautiful part of the world.
Yeah. And also the Cookery School, which is a couple of miles down the road. That is a lovely place for people to go over and visit. They can do a cookery course for an afternoon. It's anything from a few hours to 3 months, basically. You choose your cookery course, whatever you want. And even if you're not doing a cookery course, they've got wonderful gardens and the farm to go and walk around, which are really nice. Very well worthwhile doing.
Yeah, you are. It's a beautiful pastoral halcyon place here, isn't it?
Mm, it is.
And what I really like as well, when the welcome yesterday, I mean, I love scones anyway, you know, but I mean, they were the lightest, fluffiest scones.
Very good.
I don't know which member of the family made those for, right?
That was JR, our pastry chef.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, they really
were.
I have to
give them credit.
I have to say, that was pretty much up there with the top scone I've ever had. Fantastic.
Good.
And a lovely welcome, in fact, isn't
good.
It? It's real Irish hospitality. Mm. How did you get on during the lockdown? Were you going crazy? I mean, was it a really challenging time for you?
It was challenging. I think it's been challenging for most people. This big old house needs people in it, and it gets a bit sad if it's too empty. My family actually came in and lived here, so at least there was a bit of life in the house. But it was very challenging. We did, for a while, we did takeaway meals on a Friday and Saturday night. And at least you were seeing people coming in the door. They were only coming in to collect and go away again. But it was very challenging. We did a few things with staff. We did, when we could, we did training sessions and a few little outings and walks and things like that with our staff. But for a lot of the time, you couldn't even do that. We were just walking around in circles, but at least we have a nice place to walk.
Yeah, and now, how are you finding it now? I mean, restrictions, of course, are easing off. I mean, I could see here, obviously, everybody wears masks when they're walking around, and it's all very well done. And you have, I mean, the property lends itself, I suppose, to lots of, you know, air, and, you know, it's a really lovely space to be in. Mm. How are you finding it now? I mean, how are things, is it a new place, really, we're finding ourselves?
Well, it's not without its challenges, but, you know, we're so thankful to be open. We're so thankful to be busy. The Irish people, when we didn't have any overseas people coming into the country, the Irish people came out in their droves, and we're so thankful for that. So we've really been busy. Anytime we've been open, we've been absolutely chock-a-block, which we're very, very thankful for.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, in terms of the state of Irish hospitality, I mean, how do you find it now? What is your take on us going forward?
Well, I think hospitality has been incredibly badly affected, I suppose, by COVID, from lots of ways, from business-wise to staffing is a challenge. And that's not just Ireland, it's not just Europe, I think it's worldwide. So I don't quite know what the outcome of that is going to be. I think people, when they're at home for 6 months or whatever, decided that they might go into different industries, earn their money somewhere else. And that is certainly a challenge.
Yeah, and I mean, it was funny what you were saying, because Sasha, your nephew, was serving us the lovely wines last night, and that's really what, it's all hands on deck at the moment, isn't it?
It is.
The way things are at the moment.
Yeah, we're lucky we've got a big family.
Absolutely. And Vern, I mean, are you busy here all year round? Are you open nearly all year, are you?
We're open pretty much all year. Usually we take maybe a couple of weeks in January to do some work on the house. Big old house, there's always something to be done. So, and we're always upgrading. We upgrade about at least three bedrooms every year. So that's on an ongoing basis. But basically, we're open all year round. We close after lunch on Christmas Eve, and then we're open again over New Year. And then normally we close for about 2, maybe 3 weeks in January, depending on what work is going on. But apart from that, we're open all the time.
And as a woman who loved her travels, I mean, have you made any plans now? Have you got any exciting things planned for those few weeks in January? Are you dying to get it back to France or wherever?
No, I've made no plans. I've discovered that the less plans you make at the moment in this pandemic, the better off you are. And if it's anything, it'll be last minute.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, Fern, that's lovely. It was a pleasure to talk to you this evening. And I'd have to say, it's been an absolute pleasure to be here. I hadn't been before and I will definitely be back.
Excellent.
Now, what have you picked for your third and final choice of music for us this evening?
Okay, so my third choice this evening is by a local group called The Flavours. They're from Cloyne and Ahada, and the song is called Cookie Crumbles.
Fern Allen, thank you so much.